Hello and welcome to Starkey's Kashrus teleconference and web conference. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and we're here in the Starkey offices in Baltimore. To my right is Rabbi David Heber. Hello, Rabbi Heber, welcome back. And to his right is Rabbi Baruch Beyer. We're here the last Wednesday of every month at noon, Eastern Time, on dimdim.com, or if you want to call in by phone, we're at 218-895-1203, passcode 2020. And our technical support is given by Reb Zev Steen, and we're very glad that you could join us on this, at least what is in the eastern coast, a snowy, cold, wintry day. So we'll warm it up with some kashrus talk, Torah talk. And our discussion today really focuses on our guest, who's Rabbi Heber, who just got back less than 24 hours ago from a trip not quite around the world, but in England, Europe, Israel, and we're going to discuss the trip and the kashrus ramifications. What did you see, and what was interesting that you want to share with our viewers and listeners? So let's see, Rabbi Heber, where you started off in
Mainland Europe.
In Europe,
to do inspections for Starkey facilities. We have typically, like many of our companies, we have local representation there, a mashgiach who goes in to the plant on a regular basis. But very often, many of our companies, someone from the office visits on a periodic basis, depending on which company. I try to go annually to certain specific companies, certain factories, just to check up on things and make sure that everything is, you know, status quo and running as is. See if the company has questions, can look over, make sure, you know, nothing was missed.
Right.
What would be the criteria to decide which companies you visit annually and which ones?
So usually, the more complicated ones, the more complicated factories are, you know, we try to get to someone from the office to go once a year. Complicated would mean a company where the ramifications of an error occurring are much greater. In other words, companies where that we know the system. Let's say a phosphoric acid facility. We don't need someone from the office to go regularly, because enough the mashgiach is going, because it typically nothing's going to go wrong in such a facility. But if it's let's say it's a plant that makes kosher treif, they go back and forth, they kosher. This is one example of something that would require, or we would want to try to get there once a year. Not necessarily, but you know, it would depend. So that's usually how.
So you mentioned to me before that you went to 14 facilities in Europe.
Right.
Wow. In the same area.
Same general area, and it was
same
over
day?
The course of about, no, not the same oh, day, no, okay. Over the course of about 2.5 days.
Okay.
2.5 business days.
How do you get around?
So there in Europe I don't drive, so I don't know, it's just sometimes...
The wrong side of the street?
No, actually England was the wrong side of the street. I certainly didn't drive there. But, you know, the company picks up, and then at one point, actually... I go with the mashgiach at part of the way as well, but I don't drive.
I just want to mention that if anybody has a question for Rabbi Heber, you can chat with us on the dimdim on the right side of your screen. There's a chat button that you can talk to us and ask questions or comment that you like. So, how does the company view this? This VIP visit from Rabbi Heber.
All right, it could be really any rabbi in the office could take this VIP visit to the company. Well, again, it's a company who you deal with on an ongoing basis. In other words, the way Kashrus works really with with most agencies is you have a main office and you have, you know, field representatives. So a lot of the work is being done, you know, between the office and the contact, the staff, the personnel at a particular company, and sometimes it's a person at the plant, depending on how the company is set up. You know, there are emails that go back and forth. Sometimes it's phone calls, or some companies deal with fax. However, it is, you know, we're reviewing on a regular basis let's say, new formulations, new suppliers, new ingredients. We process that information in the office, and then, of course, we notify the mashgiach that, you know, the company wants to do this. If it's a critical change, we may have the mashgiach go first before we approve the new product. But it's really working in a triangle. It's the company is informing the office, and the office is then, you know, approving it or not approving it, and then informing the mashgiach of this new approval. Or again, like I say, if it's delicate, we'll ask the mashgiach to check it out first. But anyway, what you have is this constant back and forth. So I think the company views it as an opportunity to, meet face to face. And okay, besides the quote unquote audit part of the visit, which, you know, any company is probably a little bit, they wonder what's the rabbi going to find on the audit. Mm-hmm. But besides that part, which you know, they do the best they can, and you know, hopefully we don't find any problems. But again, they view it as an opportunity to ask their own questions face to face, to raise their raise their issues. In this particular company, I met with not only the contact, but I met with the boss of the contact, who I don't deal with on a regular basis. But that boss obviously is getting reports on a regular basis of what's going on. So it's an opportunity for that, you know, higher person in the company to raise any issues or concerns that they may have, you know, with from our end, what we could do
keeps everything running smoothly.
Exactly.
I once had a visit to a particular place that's coming to mind now, and it was actually an initial inspection, the first time that anybody from Starkey had been there, and I was doing my inspection, and the woman who owned the company, she expressed some hesitancy or nervousness, and I said to her, you know, am I making you nervous? Because I don't think that I am, because I'm not, I'm not overbearing. So she said, well, yeah, when you come in and you look around at my, it's not you, Rabbi, just when you come in and you're looking at, it's like her baby, you know, it's her facility, it's her company, and when you come in and you're inspecting, so there is a certain feeling of nervousness. That
right,
they have.
That's really the due role, Kashrus, you know, it's a unique role that as Kashrus administrators play, and that is, you know, on one hand, we are here to help the company. We're here, you know, mm-hmm. They view Kashrus as a marketing technique, and we are the agents on their behalf, because mm-hmm. by our, you know, by the Star King on the product and the issuing of the kosher letter, which ends up on desks, you know, this company, this will end up on desks, you know, worldwide. They view this as helping them, so we're here to help. You know, what can we do? Maybe we want to expand. They ask to expand on the products. They ask, you know, we want to give a certification on this. What will it take? What's involved? Is it this part of the world? I mean, in this case, they asked me, you know, we have maybe a plant in such and such place that we're interested in. What's the representation there? You know, etc. So we're helping them. How can you help us? We want this to work. On the other hand, it's an audit. Also, we're playing the auditors. Of saying, hey, you know, this might be a problem. You need to fix that. We found something here. We found something there. And
a little bit like FBI.
I think
exactly.
It's also, it's a good opportunity to kind of break some stereotypes that they have about Orthodox Jews and Jews in general. You know, you're going there to Europe, and this is a really an opportunity to show that, you know, we're normal people, no horns.
Here's a question that we have, Rabbi Heber. This must be from someone who knows you. Yehuda asks, what countries did Rabbi Heber visit? Any calendaric issues come up in his travels? So your fame in the calendar, Jewish calendar world precedes you here. So
any calendar issues that came up, I guess the Zmanim issue that comes up is
you have to explain what the Zmanim
was at the times. In other words, if I go in the winter time, what happens is the sunrise is very late in some of these countries.
And where was it the latest?
The latest I've now was in this trip. The latest one was in Germany, where the sun rose at 8:23.
8:23.
And I've been in facilities where the sun rose. In Denmark, the sun rises, and I don't know exactly, but I think in the 8:30, 8:40 range. And very often I've gone to Denmark, and this year I didn't go, but I've been to Denmark. Sometimes it's my last day, and I want to catch the last flight out back to America, which is usually early afternoon if it's my last day, it'll be either Wednesday or Thursday. This year I went on to Eretz Yisrael for Shabbos. But so if it's my last day, I need to start early. So I've had cases where, and you know, these plants are running 24/7. And, you know, they will accommodate and sometimes start, you know, they'll come in early, 7 a.m. to start an inspection. You can't daven before that inspection.
Right.
So start at 7 in the morning, do the inspection, and then daven, and then finish the inspection. So that's built into the scheduling is the ability to daven. So
I mean, if sunrise is 8:30, you can't even begin the shachris, the morning prayers, before, you know,
correct. There's one advantage of this weather. Yeah, correct. The one nice thing of starting inspection so early is that I could daven after sunrise. In other words, normally you daven and you run to work, let's say, and you're davening before sunrise. But if you're anyway davening in the middle of an inspection, which is running from 7 a.m. to, let's say, 10:30 a.m., then you tell them, look, I'd like to, you know, I need an office for my morning prayers at 8 o'clock, and then you daven vasikin. Very nice, you know.
Right, you daven with the sunrise. Another question is from Chana. Any issues with TSA while traveling? Did they didn't confiscate your tefillin or anything like that?
No, I didn't.
Or they didn't.
I didn't have a problem for anything from TSA.
Did you go through one of those controversial scanners, the body scanners?
Maybe in Baltimore, I think when we first left, I don't recall. Uh-huh. But in other, every country has different, you know, menhagim. In Eretz Yisrael, they, you know, they
of
ask
course,
questions.
They interview you.
They interview you. I only,
you were only there for what? How
for
many
4 days.
4 days.
But so you get to keep your shoes on in Israel.
Right.
You keep,
did that trouble them that you were there for
no, but they asked me, you know, what yeshivas are my sons learning in, and, you know, what a few questions. They're just trying to make sure that you're legit in the statement. On the way back, I was in Manchester for a day. I just thought I might be questioned more because, like, why did you come for 1 day?
Right.
To
what did you do in Manchester?
So Manchester, besides visiting my daughter and in Eretz Yisrael, besides visiting my sons, in Manchester I went to the Manchester Based In, which is, you know, we've dealt with them and I've been in touch, you know, often by email with Rabbi Roy in Manchester on a regular basis. And we, you know, I went to the office and saw them at the office. I met with, from the Manchester based, and also is Stein Krauss, who I met with briefly at the office, but I went back to his home at 10:30 at night to discuss Hilchos Brachos with him. Stein Krauss is the author of Makor HaBracha, which, to the best of my knowledge, was the first contemporary sefer on Hilchos Brachos, where he brought out the issues, which is a serial. Some of them, again, we do this at Star K, we have that list. We've had for a number of years. He was already in 1977 already delving into these questions and determining what brachas to make. And we actually quote in our Kashkaras article, I showed him, I brought a copy of the article, I showed him, we quote his doc regarding a puff wheat. The puff wheat, he holds mezainis, and it's been questioned exactly, the sock and the mosupik, and we too have the ikar behind him, his the root of mezainis, with a tzad, which means there's a reason to say it's Hadama. There are many, many authorities that hold Hadama. He was thrilled to know that Rabbi Heinemann, for all intents and purposes, agrees with him, because he really was felt that he was the lone.
And on the limb.
Yeah, right, a little bit. But anyway, so I showed him that, and we discussed.
You also told me you talked about the Crispix question.
I actually spoke in Eretz Yisrael I met Motzei Shabbos in Har Nof with Rabbi Alexander Mandelbaum, who's the author of what my understanding is today the most popular Hilchos Brachos Sefer, and that's known as the Sefer Zeis HaBracha. And
so the Crispix is because it's two-sided, it has two different...
Correct. Mezainis on one side and...
What is it? With rice and corn.
Rice and corn, right. And we, you know, people from our office have been to the factory where they actually make that product. You know, we've seen it.
Kellogg's
product. And Rabbi Heinemann holds it's two brachas. You make a mezainis on the rice part, eat some of that, and then hadama on the corn side. We spoke about exactly how to make the brachas.
Does he hold the same way?
This has been a question that I get asked pretty often on this, and it's one food, it should be one bracha. Rav Heinemann has always maintained it's two separate brachas, and Rav Mandelbaum agreed with that, you know, based on his understanding. Rav Mandelbaum, a number of years ago, one of his maduras, which is one of his, I guess,
additions,
actually published our brachas list in there. You know, the whole brachas list, Star K brachas list, it's right in there. So it was a thrill to meet him because we had gone back and forth on this list. And of course, I told him we'll keep him updated. We want to hopefully after Pesach work, Bleedner, work on updating that list again, really to expand it. There's so many more cereals on the market. So it was very nice to. You know, we spoke about corn checks, which is not a
question.
It's corn checks. We've also maintained Hadama. It's been under attack, so to speak, by attack. When we say Milchamas Shel Torah, which means the war of understanding the depths of the Torah, and many have maintained that it should be shahakol based on how it's made. But in describing it to him, also he also maintained its Hadama, like really Rav Haim has been saying all along. And again, it's been up for discussion in our office.
And you also met with Rabbi Eliyashiv.
You did have the opportunity to meet Rabbi Eliyashiv.
That's really it's worth it to go.
It was a thrill. It was a thrill. Yeah. To, I mean, it
how
was
did
a
you
thrill.
Get in?
It was
how did
thrill.
You get in to see him?
So somebody here was had been to had a bar mitzvah in our shul, and someone from Israel, his brother, the Baal Simcha, visited for the bar mitzvah. And I heard he's very close to Rabbi Eliyashiv, and he's in with Rabbi Eliyashiv on a really daily basis. Mm-hmm. I asked him if I can go, and he told me, you know, come at this time, and he'll arrange for that. So I had a couple minutes there to discuss.
For those who may not know, Rabbi Eliyashiv is perhaps the foremost halachic decisor alive today. So it's a real opportunity.
How old is he now?
Can I heard he's 100.
He's 100 years old.
100.
So Thursday night I saw Rabbi Eliyashiv, and for Friday night also one of the Gedolim of Scheinberg. Shlita there went to just to say I was eating in the neighborhood where he lives, so we went to say good Shabbos to him, but didn't have an opportunity to speak with him about any halachic issues. But it was just very exciting to
here are some more questions that we can take here. This is a general question, that's okay. Why can't the Star K give a hashgacha on Dole just lettuce or greener selections instead of the classic iceberg? I'm not familiar what's in the just lettuce or the greener selections. We do give on the romaine, some of the romaine, don't we?
It all depends on the run.
It also depends on the run. Sometimes we may give on those if that run passed with
the Mashgiach on site in all the factories. And
right, he checks the lettuce. So it could be that sometimes we have on those products, but not always. It could also be that they're made in different facilities. That could also be possible.
It's a seasonal thing as well.
Right. So
sometimes there's more infestation than others.
Right. It could also be that they don't ask us. They didn't ask us to certify that, which is also a possibility. Do you know anything about this Maraska? He's asking about some Maraska products.
Fluids,
used to be,
no?
Yeah. Used to be certified by the Star K.
I'm not familiar with that. I wasn't that part of Europe on this trip.
He says, Yehuda says, Rabbi Binyamin Forst in his Hilchos Brachos Sefer also says two brachos on what? I guess that's the crispix.
Crispix, yeah. No, it's definitely been, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you also met with Rabbi Westheim, who is, he has a kashrus agency also.
Yes, Rabbi Westheim has a kashrus agency. He lives in Manchester.
One of the foremost kashrus professionals in England.
In England, right. Wonderful, wonderful person. Really, just to speak with him and spend time with him was a fabulous experience. We actually dealt with Rabbi Westheim regarding Pesach, and I had the opportunity to speak with him, really follow up some emails that have gone back and forth. In previous years, they certify an oat matzah that is produced under the certification of Westheim. Mm-hmm. Now, oats are typically heated in advance of the tochen process, of the grinding process.
To get rid of the enzyme that causes it to be bitter.
Right, to kill the enzyme. What happens is oats have this enzyme that if you just let oats sit, it causes the product to turn rancid. So oats are heated. Obviously, for Pesach, you can't heat them with water because you render them hummus or pasta hummus, we would never eat it. But to do a dry heating of it to kill the enzyme would be a problem. Now, so then you can make matzahs from that, from the oat. It's called oat matzahs. Now, historically, there's never been a Pesach concern, a kosher Pesach concern. It's the highest standards, and it's not a problem. The issue Rabbi Heinemann has historically had and we've always published this in our Conscious Currents guide, in our book for guide for Pesach, was that since you, matzah has to be fit, matzah has to be fit to become chametz. In other words, matzah is baked into a matzah, but if the grain is a grain that was not fit to become chametz, then it may not be fit to become matzah. So it's chametz if obviously it sat for a while and was not processed, then becomes chametz. But if you take that same grain that had you left it alone with the water for more than 18 minutes, then it would become chametz. That same grain, it would become matzah if you have mixed it with water and made it into a dough and baked it. Now, the issue here was that this oat, which was heated, is not fit to become chametz. Cannot become chametz because chametz is a function of this enzyme. So Rabbi Heinemann was always of the opinion that if you heat the oats before you bake the matzahs, then they are kosher to Pesach 100%, but they're not fit to be yotzei to fulfill your obligation to Pesach Seder,
right,
and they should not be used for Pesach night. Now the problem with that is people who are buying oat matzahs are doing it for dietary
for Seder,
reasons.
Right.
For the Seder, they have problems, digesting issues, and they're buying these oat matzahs specifically for the Seder. That's really the only time they may even eat the matzahs over Pesach, and now this posed a problem. So what they did, and this we determined this, it was actually in the last Kashrus Current, but he described to me, how they had solved the problem. They got an oat which they did not have to heat, and therefore the oat could be crushed and tochen, in the process of tochen, ground is the better word than crushed, ground without heating the oat, and therefore these oats are no different than a wheat kernel,
mm-hmm,
and therefore those oats now would meet Rabbi Heinemann's criteria, and therefore this year we're going to say that those matzahs under certification of Diane Westheim, forgot the name of the brand name, are going to be fit for the Seder.
I think it's put up by Rabbi Kestenbaum. He's the one who arranges it.
Right. That's what's called. It has a brand name.
It might have a brand name. But people know, I think.
He described to me, I don't know if the information is proprietary, so I'm not going to share it exactly, but just the main thing is he told me exactly where they did it. He told me which mashgichim they used, who was involved in this process. They went out to some, far off place that they were able to, he made this discovery after a lot of research, and were able to get these oats that would service this issue,
mm-hmm,
and therefore that's what's going to be those oat matzahs this year, to the benefit of people who need them.
So I think it's very, the fact that you met with all these rabbis and from different agencies, it just brings, in my mind, it brings the kosher agencies closer together, because
absolutely,
we deal with them on a professional basis. But when you have the personal aspect involved also, so it makes everybody work together even more so.
100%. Look, we are using products that are certified by other agencies on an ongoing basis, and they're using our products. We see Rabbi Westheim's kosher certification letter,
mm-hmm,
come across our desk. We see the Manchester based in kosher,
right,
certification come across, mm-hmm, our desk on an ongoing basis, and therefore we need them. They need us in order to
right,
do all of this right. And, meaning them just helps, especially next time I have a question about something, it's so much nicer that you met with them.
It's easier to call them.
They're always accessible, but it's just so much nicer when you know who's sitting on the other end of the desk.
We do have another question about the a product called maraschino, a sweetened brandy made from local cherries. Do they add any wine to the maraschino? So again, it's a liquor question or a wine question. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that. That's not my...
We have to get Rabbi Rosen here.
Maybe this person should call the office.
You're welcome to call the office at 410-484-4110, or you can email us at star-k@star-k.org. And if you have any comments, again, feel free to comment on the chat box, on your dim-dim.
I'd like to go back to, this is actually a conscious,
sure,
TSA question,
mm-hmm,
that's related to going back to the question about any issues with TSA. This is not with TSA, but I should point out that the immigration has the concerns with food being brought into the United,
right,
States. So, mm-hmm, a regular person who travels doesn't have the need to bring food.
They can buy
along.
It.
They can buy,
mm-hmm,
it, and it's not a problem. But, mm-hmm, a Yid always travel, especially when we go on this trip. There's no kosher food available, to the best of my knowledge, in the town I was at. And, you know, we bring a lot of our own food. So coming into here, it's not a problem, but very often you have, you know, leftovers on the way back.
The Europeans don't care if you bring in food?
No, they don't. Not that I know. I saw maybe they have a problem with maybe meat or something. I saw a sign hanging, but they don't ask you, and they don't, you know, I'm unaware of that law per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody, if I'm making a mistake, maybe someone should let us know. But in the United States, they're very careful about this. So, for example, even grain products, typically they'll package. What I did was, I had some packaged items from Eretz Yisrael, you know, some candy and so on. And anything, you know, I had brought from my last stop was Manchester, and I had even from Eretz Yisrael left over some cake with me. But it's unmarked and unlabeled. So, I leave it behind because you could get fined. Mm-hmm. Someone told me, actually, one of our Meshkichim from Europe told me his daughter forgot she had some fruit in her bag and she was fined.
Yeah, well, fruit really?
Was fined. Fruit is a big issue. She was fined, you know, a few hundred dollars.
Like
$100.
The Esrog issue.
Right, we talked a few months ago about somebody who was upset because
their Esrog
they brought from Israel. They came during the intermediate days of Sukkot, they came back to America, and their Esrog was confiscated,
yeah,
not by TSA, but by the
customs people,
and they felt very upset.
Yeah,
about
I didn't know, but I mean, there is some information that's gone out regarding this Esrog.
There was information that was disseminated by some of the American kosher organizations that you were allowed, the TSA would not have a problem with your Esrog taking it on board. So they said, why is it a problem when we had our Esrog? But they were confused a little bit because the TSA, all that meant was if you're going domestically,
right,
from Baltimore to California, you could carry your Esrog on board and they wouldn't think
it's a bomb.
Right.
Exploding,
but that had nothing to do with whether or not you could go through customs. Right. Yeah.
What I did was at the border, I had some packaged items. So what I always do is I wrote on the form they give you, I wrote some packaged items, and I when I got to the first desk, they had packaged items. So he asked me back, do I have anything packaged, meat, fruit or vegetables? I said no, I did have packaged cake, all was labeled, cake and a couple other items, candy. So that he had no problem with. So I was just straightforward with them, and didn't declare. Once I had the rolls I had taken with me, I didn't use up, so I still had them. And I realized, you know, they were just Americans. That's it. Uh-huh. I had the same thing I came out of America with.
Did you have to daven pray on the plane, or you were able to avoid that?
Once only, I had to daven marv. A lot of times, it depends on the time you leave. If you go to Europe and you leave later at night, like on a 9 p.m. flight to Europe,
then you have to daven.
You're going to land at
morning.
You're gonna Chakras. Exactly. So you're going to land enough. You're going to daven Chakras on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
My flight left about 4 o'clock. PM, so it landed really before the sun came up.
You had to daven Mar.
I daven Mar, right. After the plane took off. Well, it took a while because they started serving things, and I waited until quiet had done. Then I went. I asked the permission to daven in the back of the plane. Once everything quieted down, they had no problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I still, you know, that was.
Okay, great. So I think we'll stop there. Thank you, Rabbi Hever. If anybody has any last minute questions, you're welcome to chat with us in these last few seconds. We are here the last Wednesday of every month at noon at dimdim.com and if you want to access us by telephone, it's 218-895-1203, passcode 2020 pound. And I want to thank everybody for joining us. As usual, you can call us 410-484-4110, or you can email star-k@star-k.org. Thank you, Rabbi Heber, for joining
thank
us
you.
And
thank
rest
you.
Up a little bit.
Yeah.
And thank you, Rabbi Beyer, and thank you to Rabbi Zev Steen for his technical assistance. Here's a question from Star K Fan. How many times did you say Tefilas HaDerech, which is the prayer that you say when you go out on the road for a safe journey? So how many times did you say
that's
that?
That's a good question.
You mean you didn't?
I didn't add it up.
You didn't add
no,
it up
that's
yet?
A good question. Let's say I had to make it Sunday night. That was one. Then I had to make it Wednesday when I flew to Eretz Yisrael. Then I had to make it on the way back.
What about with India?
Well, what happened on
I didn't go.
You didn't travel
that far?
It was really the next day, but it wasn't far enough to require a bracha. Then Sunday night was number three. And it was four times. Four times I said Tfilas HaDerech.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not probably a record.
No. So if you really run, if you run good, you know.
We have the Guinness Book of Jewish Records. It's not going to.
Six days.
It can be maximum of once a day.
Right. Correct.
So if
in
you're going
theory, in theory, in theory, it could be more, but it's not really relevant. The halacha states, if a person traveled during the day and he stopped in a city, thinking he's done with his travels for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, let's say he rested up, and then and then in the evening or even later in the day, he says,
that's a good one.
I want to keep going. I have kaychas to keep going, and then he drives another couple hundred miles, let's say. Then you'd actually say twice in a day, but that's not so common. Usually people know where they want to get to.
Right, but we're looking for the things that are uncommon here. I mean,
Of course.
So you could have actually twice a day or even more.
Well, yeah, but then already, but if someone Sunday did that and Monday did that, I think by Tuesday we tell them, listen, you're not going to hit those again because you knew you're gonna keep traveling. Yeah.
All right, thank you again. And thank you for joining us to all the viewers and listeners. And we hope to see you next month. Take care.